Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. While specific images come to mind when a city is mentioned, such as Times Square in New York City or the Gateway Arch in St. Louis, no immediate image comes to mind when Columbus is mentioned. The state capital has garnered a lot of positive press in recent years. The compliments have ranged from being the fastest growing metropolitan area in the Midwest to one of the nation's best big cities. That wasn't always the case for the state capital, once described as a cow town. How Columbus has evolved over time is the focus of the book, Columbus in 50 Maps, written by our guest today, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. Welcome back to All Sides, Brent.
Thanks so much for having me.
So in the introduction of your book, Columbus in 50 Maps, you write, Columbus is a place, particularly in search of an identity. We have never been gifted with a catchy nickname or a ready-made identity bestowed upon us. And this is a topic we've discussed in the past on All Sides. So as someone who grew up here and just wrote a book about it, what is Columbus's identity to you?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I had to do a lot of thinking about that when coming up with this book, you know, because like you said, it's a kind of perpetual topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like one of the things I talk about more in the introduction and throughout the book is like Columbus has been growing for essentially its whole history,
mm-hmm.
you know. So when you look at, if you take a snapshot of Columbus at different periods of time, it's like almost a completely different place, you know. Like mm-hmm. in 1920, Toledo had a higher population than Columbus did. And at that time also, you know, like we were surrounded by these major cities like, you know, Cincinnati, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. At one point, every one of those cities was a top five city in the country in terms of population. And, you know, we weren't. And so, you know, part of the thing, I kind of feel like after writing this book, I kind of feel like we should give ourselves a little bit of a break on the the whole like identity thing. Like we don't need a, you know, like it's almost like with people, you have like a 12-year-old, you don't expect to have a fully formed identity. Like, you know, like we're still a young city and we're still growing and we're still figuring that out. And, you know, there's also a map in the book called the Put Us on the Map map,
yeah.
where I kind of look at some of the projects over the years that have you know, and the common theme with that and with this idea about kind of the obsession about coming up with a slogan or a nickname, a lot of it seems to be kind of focused on what do people from the outside think of us, or, you know, and with some of these projects like that I talk about, like a Miraflora or like a giant Christopher Columbus statue, like these are sort of like one-off projects that are designed to sort of like get people to pay attention to us and mm-hmm. like notice us. And, you know, one of the things I felt like making this book and coming up with all of these maps and the text about them is, you know, it's more important that we kind of sort of lift up these stories. And, you know, I have a book about literary Columbus where mm-hmm. I look at the different bookstores and the different important places that have kind of shaped that scene in Columbus. And, you know, that's like there's poetry nights and there's people like Hanif Abdurraqib who have come up out of that really mm-hmm. organic culture and that scene that has grown here. And that didn't happen because, you know, it wasn't like a strategy. It wasn't like a nickname that somebody came up with. It was just it came out of Columbus sort of organically and it grew. And we supported that. And we got national attention because of it. But it sort of came. And, you know, that, I guess, to answer your question, that's one of the themes of the book is that we need to kind of celebrate what has come out of this city more specifically than kind of try and figure out, oh, this is the slogan, or this is the nickname.
It's hard to look into the future, but do you think Columbus is like a teenager city right now, or are we in our mid-20s? Like, where are we?
I think we're a teenager. That's okay. And, you know, like the need to sort of like put us beyond there, I think, you know, part of it is because these other cities, they just have a longer history as a major city.
Yeah.
But I think it's okay to be a teenager city. Yeah. I think, you know, Columbus has a really fascinating history, has so many interesting stories, and those are the kind of things we're trying to tell with the book. And it's kind of worthy of celebrating and give ourselves a little bit of break, you know, like as we figure this out, as we more people learn about our history, that kind of develops naturally, sort of a more of a sense of what this place is.
Yeah, we used to have Christopher Columbus statues. We used to have a Santa Maria ship, but that's one of those things where leaning into that didn't age well.
No. And, you know, I have a map about that in the book too, like yeah. The Columbus and Columbus and how I think I say now we have as many major statues of Arnold Schwarzenegger as we do of Christopher Columbus in the city of Columbus.
Sure.
Which is different than it was even like 15 years ago. But that's something that evolves. I also talk in the book, we have a map about kind of the origins of like the platting of Franklinton and Columbus and how we actually were going to be called Ohio City. That was the original.
It was supposed to be the name of us.
Of Columbus, yeah, yeah. And
That sounds weird, and it's hard to wrap your head around calling this place Ohio City, but it is not as problematic as Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, we could have avoided that whole discussion.
So why did you want to write this book? The book is called Columbus in 50 Maps, and it's chock full of lots of different kinds of maps, which we'll go through throughout this hour, but why write a book about maps?
Well, the quick answer is that Belt Publishing, who this is a whole series, so they've done Cleveland in 50 Maps and Buffalo in 50 Maps. They reached out to me. I think they had seen my writing on Columbus Underground and thought I might be somebody who could help to sort of shepherd this project into being. And I was super excited when they did because this is right up my alley. I've always loved maps. And just combined with sort of the topics that I'm interested in, that's kind of what these other books have covered, you know, urban development and issues with growing cities and all of that kind of thing. And what I found, and, you know, I should say I worked with Vicki Johnson-Dahl. She's an amazing cartographer, and she's the one who actually put together the maps, and we worked collaboratively to try and kind of figure out what we include and what we don't. But what I found is that you can really tell a lot of interesting stories with, you know, maps combined with a little bit of text. You can get way farther than you could with like text only or visual only. Like I feel like we covered a lot of ground in this book, which was really fun and amazing. And we were also able to, in a kind of an approachable way, dive into some issues that are kind of tricky.
Mm. Yeah, and listeners, the maps in here are beautiful, but and then they're also just all-consuming. Like, once I started looking at them, I couldn't stop looking at the maps, which is fascinating. I didn't know I had a map thing until I looked at your book.
There you go. That's a great compliment. And it's not just, you don't already have to think of yourself as a map nerd. You can get sucked in.
I got sucked in. So I recommend to our radio listeners to pick up a copy of the book so you can get sucked in as well. I stayed up way too late looking at all the maps. But books about maps seem to be having a moment right now. I'm told that, you know, other cities have a similar book. There's one about my hometown, Pittsburgh. So is there an attraction to map books, or did this company just like find something?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my background, I've always been into maps, so it's hard to say, but it does seem like it's kind of catching on maybe a little bit. I think the cool thing about this series, and the Pittsburgh book is great, you should definitely check that one out.
I'm gonna have to spare several hours.
But like I said, when you maps are just a different way of sort of organizing information, and I think with what we have like today, I feel like everybody has this default like Google map in their head, which is just you know, these maps do not look anything like Google maps, and I think that's kind of exciting for people to think, oh, there's different ways to tell these stories that are really, like you said, it can be really beautiful, and it can also convey things that are hard to just convey, like just in text or with a picture, you know. Mm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we are talking about the many identities of Columbus with Brent Warren, author of the book Columbus in 50 Maps. So the book is divided into four sections. Can you tell me about what, like, just briefly, you know, what the four sections are, the story that each one is meant to tell?
The first section is called Situating the City, and that really starts off almost chronologically. Like, the first map is called Mounds and Earthworks, and this is something that I learned so much about doing this book that I still am learning about it. It's so fascinating. But, you know, we have with the the World Heritage Site. We know about, I feel like it's getting more attention, the earthworks around Columbus, but I was surprised to learn there were so many in Columbus that are no longer there. And we
mounds that have been removed.
Yes.
His map shows the mounds that still exist and then the mounds and earthworks that have been removed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that first section has more, it kind of goes through the history and you look at the growth, you see the annexation. You also see things like, where the suburbs are and how that occurred through the years. Section two is getting to know the city. And that has some really just a huge range of maps. Like there's one that shows the actual temperature on a given day in August everywhere in the city, which I think is amazing. There's a getting around section, which delves into transportation quite a bit more. And then section four, another kind of like grab bag category, is places and people in the city. And that just has another huge variety of different kinds of maps in it.
Where did you do most of your research for this book?
Right here in Columbus, the Columbus Metropolitan Library is an amazing resource, especially for the historic maps. The Ohio History Connection was a big help. There's also these, there's like Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, which, some of the maps, like the mounds map, we had to do a lot of work on our own to kind of digitize and figure out where all these mounds were. But some of the other ones are based on, other people have already done that work, like people at MORPC or people at the City of Columbus or Franklin County. We have one that's ended up being one of my favorites, which was houses by year built. And that's just information to you. If you go to the auditor's website, you can see when your house was built. But we mapped it. Vicky made some decisions about how to map it and how to break it up into categories. And it looks beautiful, for one thing. And also, you look at that map, and you see the whole story of, the history of the city and how different neighborhoods developed at different times. And it's not just, concentric circles. It's like based on the streetcar lines and then other things through the years. But you could see all that just kind of looking at the map, which is really fun.
What was the hardest map to put together?
Oh, geez. There was one called that I was really happy. I kind of came up with this idea late, so it was hard just for that reason. We had to kind of pull it together quickly, but it's called Strip Mall Paradise, and it's about Bethel Road, which is an amazing place. And if you're from Columbus, if you know that area,
you know
the amazing restaurants. But that involved kind of like a painstaking, like we had to make sure we had them all. It shows, the map shows by flag, the country of origin for all the different restaurants. So we had to kind of go through one by one. We had to make sure we had the right information because, we're putting this in a book. So
yeah. Was there a map that you wanted to do that didn't make it into the book?
Yes. Actually, there were quite a few.
and after
we kind of submitted the book, we went through the final editing process, it was hard to stop coming up with ideas for maps. So I have some that I came up with after the book was done. But there was one that got cut very late that was just it was about sort of cycling in the city and the condition of our streets and the safety level for, if streets are more appropriate for, very experienced riders or all ages. And that showed kind of in a very kind of easy way that we have a lot of work to do on that front.
That sounds like an article for Columbus Underground.
Yeah,
now.
Absolutely.
You can use that map, right?
Yeah, I agree.
One of the maps in the book addresses the city's placement of trees. And looking at that map definitely made me feel like we do not have enough trees.
Yes.
And actually, All Sides recently, we did a show about the city's need to grow its tree canopy. But this map really showed it to me. Can you describe the map versus, so you have the tree map and then you put beside it a paved surfaces map?
Yeah. That was
describe
just
that for me.
Really amazing to see these come together because it's like the two maps are almost like inverses of each other. You know, you have where you have pavement, you don't have trees.
Yeah.
So, and you look at the tree map and you see, first of all, you can see things like all of the ravines in Columbus, those show up. You see things like our major parks and where those are. And you see, more than anything, you see the neighborhoods where there just aren't hardly any trees at all, like downtown or neighborhoods like Linden are very lacking in trees.
Yeah.
And then you see the pavement map and you see, oh yeah, downtown is full of parking lots, and that shows up in the pavement map. And yeah, we have a lot of work to do to sort of to plant trees in places where there aren't any.
Yeah, I interviewed the CEO of COTA, the bus service, one time, and she said that she lamented the number of paved parking lots in Columbus.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That map just showed it.
Yeah,
it
yeah. And we also have a downtown parking lot map in the book too.
So. Yeah, there's so yeah. much, so many paved surfaces. Yeah. Another thing that struck me was the amount of land that Columbus annexed and the township land in the 1950s. Can you describe that a little bit about how Columbus kind of ended up in the shape that it is?
Yeah. 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 No, it's not. And that was I knew that was going to be a challenge because Columbus is not a normal shape.
Well, I don't know if any city is a normal shape.
Yeah.
But
some of them are a little more regular than Columbus.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the size of Columbus, I mean, it's like 220 square miles. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And that's, there's a reason for that. It's because a lot of it goes back to Mayor Sensenbrenner, who had this policy of annexation.
What year is that? Who?
Well, we're talking in the 60s and 70s. But he said that if the surrounding areas, if they wanted water or sewer service, which the city controlled, then they would have to be annexed into Columbus. So that enabled him to sort of have these, they call them growth corridors. So like Columbus never got hemmed in like some other, like Cincinnati did or Cleveland. Like there was always room for Columbus to keep expanding out. And we did for years and years and years. And that's why it's such a sprawling city right now.
Is Columbus a weird shape compared to, like, if you look at other map books? I can't say I've ever sat down with a bunch of city shapes, but
yeah, I've looked at a lot of different city shapes, and Columbus, I can say, is a pretty weird shape.
Yeah, and you picture, you know, that like Bexley, Worthington, Upper Arlington, Grandview are all carved out, but beyond that, Columbus is a weird shape. It's like an octopus.
Right. Yeah, tentacles almost. You know? Like that's how we've been able to keep expanding and
so
keep
that. But that
territory.
Has mostly to do with water and sewer services from the 60s.
Yeah, and this strategy from back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are talking about Columbus in 50 Maps, written by our guest today, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren, who is going to stay with us. And coming up, we're going to talk about Columbus from an urban planning perspective as well. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Did you know the city of Chillicothe was once the capital of Ohio, and that Columbus was once called Ohio City? Those are just a few of the interesting facts regarding the history of Ohio's capital city found in the book Columbus in 50 Maps, written by our guest today, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. Thanks again for being here, Brent.
Thank you.
And as we continue our look at how Columbus has and continues to evolve, Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture, is joining us. Welcome back to All Sides, Jason.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Jason, as an urban planner, how do you view the evolution of Columbus from its past in the 1800s to today?
Yeah, it's a very interesting city in that, you know, obviously our growth has been tied to bigger kind of political issues, as you've noticed with, or as you noted with the state capital and everything that's come along with that. But I think it's interesting too. I think Brett does a great job of showing our industrial history, which we've kind of forgotten about. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of thinking about today, Columbus as what I would say kind of a new model of a Midwestern city in the 21st century, with our growing diversity, our kind of infill development as we've grown up here in the center of the city, the international community that's grown has been so vibrant from an economic standpoint that Brett captures in the maps. So, you know, I think the book does a phenomenal job of not only you know, presenting our past and how we got here, but some of the distinguishing features that make us unique, I think, today.
We talked earlier and we were trying to decide if Columbus is like a teenager type city because we're still growing, we're still evolving. Do you think we're a teenager or are we more in our 20s or 30s?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. You know, maybe we've gotten to the early 20s, you know, undergraduates.
Can we drink now?
Yeah, just barely. you know, the identity crisis that Brett kind of spoke about earlier and references in the book is it's very real, right? It's something, you know, I moved here 25 years ago, and it's one of the first cognizant memories of talking to people about Columbus was this sense of like, one day we're going to be a big city. But, you know, I feel like, well, I've turned around and we're almost a city of a million people, and we're one of the largest cities in the Midwest right now, fastest growing city in the Midwest in the last decade or so. So, you know, from a lot of those metrics, I would say we're probably there.
Yeah. And toward the end a few minutes ago, Brent and I were talking about how Columbus is such an interesting shape, and it kind of looks like an octopus with a lot of tentacles because of the annexation.
Yeah.
Do you think Columbus is a weird shape? I'm using the word weird. I'm using the word weird. I mean,
it's definitely distinctive. Let's put it that way.
Okay. You know, distinctive is a better word than weird.
Yeah.
Sorry, Columbus.
Yeah. You know, there are benefits though to our kind of growing, oddly shaped city. You know, if you look at the trajectory of Cleveland and Cincinnati and a lot of our peers here in the Midwest. And if you look at data going up to, you know, probably even the early 2000s, if we had stayed in our 1950s boundaries, we would have shrank just like those other cities did. And so, you know, that strategy of annexation, which is now 75 years old, has proven to be quite effective in the long term in keeping the city economically healthy.
Aside from the increase in population, what other factors do urban planners look at when determining how a city should grow to best serve its population? I mean, what is Columbus, besides gaining more people with all these shapes, what do you think was taken into consideration?
Well, obviously, you know, our physical geography, and as the book points out, our various, you know, greenways and blueways that we have here in the city. But, you know, thinking about in particular infrastructure. You know, I think one of my favorite maps in here is the transit plans that didn't come to be.
The transit plans that have died.
Yes,
that have died.
you know, if you think about going back to the light rail line proposed in 1999 that just lost by, you know, 20,000 votes or so, that would have had probably a very significant impact on the shape of the north side of the city going forward. And so, you know, I think, you know, as the book kind of talks about, we have other big infrastructure projects that are happening today. You know, those will be instrumental in the growth of the city going forward.
Yeah. Brent, can you tell me about this map, the Never Built Transit System? So it includes light rail, more than one light rail proposal, a monorail proposal, streetcars, the I can't remember what it was called. The really fast one that was supposed
Hyperloop.
To go to the Hyperloop.
Yep.
All these things that have never happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those maps that grew out kind of directly from my reporting at Columbus Underground. Like, I did a story called Never Built Transit where I looked at all of these different projects through the years. And of course, I cover the stuff on a day-to-day basis. But I thought it was important, you know, to pair that Never Built map with kind of a future transit and what is planned for the future. Because if you look geographically, the Link Us plans, you know, they may not specifically include rail right at this moment, but the bus rapid transit corridors actually go in a lot more directions than some of those early plans. You know, that light rail plan from 99 is just a single line going up to Polaris, you know. And now what they're talking about is a little doing, you know, five or six lines that are a little more spread out and maybe bring those, that kind of fast transit to more parts of the city.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the evolution of Columbus as showcased in the book Columbus in 50 Maps with its author, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. And also with us is Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture. Brent, let's talk about some of Columbus's diversity. You know, like many cities, there's a lot of diversity, but some areas are segregated. How does the city break down in terms of race and ethnicity, immigrant populations. You have a map or two or three about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about the growth of Columbus, in recent years, a lot of that growth is not just from other people in, you know, Cleveland and other parts of Ohio. It's from people from all over the world. And that's changed. Like, you know, I grew up in the 80s in Columbus, and it's just undeniably a very different place now mm-hmm. than it was then. And I think there's so many great things that have come out of that. I have a taco truck map in the book, which some people were so gracious in helping me put that together. And just it's a way of visualizing, like, you know, I think we went from in the 90s, there are maybe like, I think, 7,000 Latino or Hispanic people in the area. And now there's 70,000. So that's a huge difference.
Did you, talk to the taco trucks and be like, listen, I'm doing a book. You got to stay put.
No, they're not. They don't always stay put. So it's a snapshot.
Yeah, I got it. So but a part that comes into play here is redlining. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a part of your book mm-hmm. as well, in which the government uses government regulation to keep minorities from purchasing homes in white neighborhoods. Also, there's a lot of shapes in Columbus that took place because of redlining. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and that's something I think all of the books in the series have a redlining map, so we knew that we were going to include something about that. But when I reached out actually to the Kerwin Institute at OSU and was talking to them about some possibilities for mapping, and someone there suggested, like, what if you overlay the highway network mm-hmm. on the redlining map? And that was a great idea, because if you can see in the book, it really shows how where we put the highways was shaped very directly by where the red line neighborhoods were.
So, yes. So, for example, Interstate 71 cut right through the Bronzeville neighborhood, mm-hmm, right?
Right?
And you can
right.
see that in here, because you have the area in red, and the highway literally goes right through the middle.
Yep.
But then another example that you give is Interstate 70 dips down
right.
to avoid doing that
right.
to Bexley.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Jason, you're nodding along. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this idea of redlining through highways, I'm sure it happens in other cities too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is a national phenomenon, and historically mm-hmm. we can find these comparisons when we look at these old Hulk maps or redlining maps, as we refer to them. You know, if you think about kind of the nexus of you know, neighborhoods that were redlined, plus urban renewal programs, plus just other forms of disinvestment that happened alongside redlining. And then you see these same neighborhoods are then identified for highway expansion. Right? It becomes, a collection of slights and injuries to these communities that in many cases took decades to repair.
Whenever you talk about, Brent, your map of transit that never was, and then your map of transit yet to come, do you think that now city planners are taking that into consideration? I mean, where they're putting these roads so that they don't destroy a neighborhood?
It's a big question. Yeah, you'd like to think so. I would say it seems like some progress we've made some progress on that front. I don't mm-hmm. know what you think, Jason, about
the
current
think?
State of like highway planning and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah, we definitely are more attentive to a number of these issues. I think the other part of this looking forward is that, you know, we're talking about a different type of transportation infrastructure now. Mm-hmm. You know, less of the just bulldoze and clear everything for a highway, more thinking about, you know, how do we interweave more transit options into the existing fabric of the city. And if you're going to do that, we understand then that property values are probably going to increase all along those routes. So how do you sustain affordable housing in those areas as well? So, yeah, as a profession, we're trying to be better, and it's important to acknowledge, you know, many of those mistakes that we made in the past.
You have a map in here that has early African American settlements, and you know, I've been around here for almost 20 years, and I've heard of Flytown and Bronzeville, but some of these I had never heard of. Mm-hmm. Are they neighborhoods that are no more?
Yeah, yeah, okay. A lot of them no longer really exist, but you know, that was. I have to give credit. I think the city of Columbus, they helped to put some of that data together. Some of our local historians did some great work in kind of digging into the history and figuring out. I mean, some of these were sort of lost stories about, you know, the settlement of Columbus, and they kind of got lost over the years. But they did a lot of great work to sort of bring it back to light. And I thought it was a great chance to highlight it in the book, and early on in the book, too, to kind of recognize that that's always, you know, the African-American settlement in Columbus has been a part of our story from the very beginning, you know, not just the Great Migration or this, what happened later.
Since the 1830s,
Absolutely.
Cities are comprised of neighborhoods, so you spend a lot of time mapping Columbus's neighborhoods in different ways. One thing that I found interesting was, though, that you broke down the Short North into neighborhoods not called the Short North, right? Can you tell me about that decision?
I think the map you're talking about is actually sort of like the city's official neighborhood map. You can't...
What makes it a neighborhood, I guess, is I.
Yes, you can't make a neighborhood map without making some people angry, because it's like very hard to define these things.
Neighborhood, yeah.
Right, exactly. Okay. It's hard. And the Short North is technically not a neighborhood according to the city. You know, you have.
It's a business district.
It's High Street.
Fascinating.
It's the spine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you ended up mapping Italian village
on one side, Victorian village on the other. Yeah, university district as you go farther north. But then we have another map that looks at the Short North and kind of the development through the years of that neighborhood and how it's changed.
Jason, from a city and regional planning perspective, does it matter whether the city defines it as a neighborhood or if the people define it as a neighborhood? Like, how does that happen?
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say definitely at that community neighborhood scale, it matters a lot. But the ambiguity around a lot of these boundaries, and I always used to live on the South Side for about 15 years. And I always say, you know, we talk about the South Side, but actually if you go down Parsons Avenue, there's probably 8 different neighborhoods on each side of Parsons Avenue over like a 2-mile stretch. And each of those little neighborhoods have their own identity, their own civic identity. And so, again, you know, it's important to pay attention to some of those details, but it's certainly a difficult task to get agreement on all those boundaries.
So did you use the city's definition of neighborhood?
I did for that map, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So what Jason's talking about on the South Side, does that involve like Marion Village?
Yes.
And
Schumacher Place.
Schumacher Place,
yes,
yeah.
Vassar Village, the Reeb-Hossack area. So yeah, you think of the neighborhoods really as a mosaic and they kind of blend into each other. It's the fabric that makes up the broader community.
And it's confusing, just to add on, because some of those neighborhoods have their own area commissions.
Yeah.
Some of them have civic associations, which are a little bit different. You know, it's pretty complicated when you get into the nuts and bolts of it. But yeah.
Another map that I found very interesting is the historical map, like historic preservation, and how neighborhoods are designated as historic neighborhoods. German Village is the first one that comes to mind. There weren't that many, though, right? So does Columbus not have a lot of historical designation areas?
I don't know how it compares to other cities in terms of the overall like square miles. Or
that probably has to do with the age of the city too. Yeah,
I would agree with that. I mean, we were certainly, you know, in German Village in particular, is, you know, one of those neighborhoods that inspired similar regulations in other parts of Ohio in particular. This is a thing with a city that grew so expansively after the 1950s. I think we don't have the traditional historic fabric that you might come to see in places like Cleveland or Cincinnati. And I think Brett did a really good job in particular of talking about downtown and how much that landscape had changed just dramatically over the last half century.
Do you think over the next 50 years or so we'll end up with more historic districts just as the city ages, or is that hard to do?
Yeah, it's probably more of a political question than a policy question. Mm. You know, there are advantages and disadvantages to being a historic district.
Mm-hmm.
I think certainly looking at other ways to preserve our historic landmarks, you know, thinking about kind of the work of Columbus Landmarks as they identify those endangered sites, I could see, potentially that's a space where a lot more energy and focus could be placed.
Okay. And Jason mentioned your map of development, which shows the major projects and how they've shaped the city. Brent, there's a lot of people who have run for office in Columbus have been criticized. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism of some city politicians for being too much in the developers' pockets. Did making your map, like, what, how did that make you feel about city development whenever you started looking at the major projects that and how they impacted the city?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard for me to separate just as a reporter who, like, reports on this stuff every day. I'm pretty aware of all the new projects, and I've been writing about them for over a decade. So I'm definitely have a sort of good pulse on the day-to-day changes that are happening in the city, but sometimes it's harder for me to kind of pull back and say, oh, this is overall what's happening, which, you know, the book allowed me to have some space to do that. But yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like with Columbus, you have a lot of boosters. You have a lot of politicians who say almost nothing but positive things about Columbus. And you have that has almost inspired like a backlash where you also have people who say a lot of negative. It's kind of like, I don't know what the opposite of booster is, but naysayers. But,
yeah.
You know, the idea with the book is that there's a little something for both sides in the book. You know, you can definitely pick, depending on what you're looking at, in some ways Columbus has done a good job, and in other ways we definitely have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, Jason, you mentioned the maps that follow the city's development and the changes in the city. What did you think of that? What were your takeaways?
Yeah, you know, something that really caught my eye was actually one of the opening pages talking about the move of the Capitol here. And as Brett notes, it is politically connected landowners and developers who kind of made that happen. And so although that was 200 plus years ago, just show you that some things just don't change.
Yeah.
In the context of city boosterism and the relationship between political leaders and real estate developers.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And coming up, our look at the history of Columbus's development continues with Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren and Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture. And we'll be talking about the idea of putting Columbus on the map. We have a map for that, and have we? That's the question. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. According to author and Columbus native James Thurber, Columbus is a town in which almost anything is likely to happen and which almost anything has. When something does happen, there's a chance it will be covered by our guest today, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. He's documented the evolution of the city in his book, Columbus in 50 Maps. Thanks again for being here, Brent.
Thanks.
And also taking part in our conversation is Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Thanks.
All right. So one of the maps in the book is dedicated to the idea that would put Columbus on the map. Can you tell me some of these ideas of how we were going to make Columbus famous?
Yes. So what I ended up, I spent a lot of time thinking about this map. It was one of the first ideas I had for the book.
Columbus native there.
Right,
yes.
Right. I ended up focusing on kind of a certain time period, which I kind of feel like is the peak put us on the map time period, like late 80s, early 90s, I feel like. And, you know, you had things like the Miraflora Festival. You had the Columbus 500, which was a car race that ran downtown.
I've been here almost 20 years. I had never heard of that.
Yep, that was in the 80s. Okay. That was, I think, under Buck Reinhart. That was one of his things. Those are just some of the examples. And I kind of, you know, it's one of those things. I think it peaked at that time, and as Jason said, I think we've grown up a lot since that time. You know, so maybe you don't.
So we were like a 12-year-old middle school boy at that point.
Yeah, that fits with the car racing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't hear that as much, but you do still hear it. You do still hear people saying, "This is going to put us on the map," and it's still kind of, you know. Drives me crazy sometimes to hear people say that. But
all right. So in the book, you ask the question, when can we just say Columbus rather than adding the qualifier Columbus, Ohio? Because no one from Cincinnati or Cleveland has to add Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. So are we ready to be just Columbus?
I'm ready. I can just say Columbus. I don't know. It says Columbus in 50 maps, not Columbus, Ohio in 50
maps. Oh, yeah. Did you have to fight for that?
No, I didn't. They did that.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, hey, maybe that's a good sign.
Jason, what's your opinion here? Can we be just Columbus and not Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, I think the natural evolution is that we should be. Mm. You know, in the 25 years I've been here, we've added 250,000 people to this city. Again, we're one of the largest cities in the Midwest, in the Great Lakes region nowadays. You know, I think you raise kind of these mega projects that were supposed to kind of bring identity to the city. But what's kind of quietly happened is that our vibrant neighborhoods, quality of life, all those things have actually made this a really attractive place to be, which is why we're continuing to grow. And so, you know, sometimes it's not so much the big projects that make a city a name for itself, but it's really about the day-to-day living and existence and quality of life for folks within that community.
So, Brent, you have a map in there that shows all the Columbuses around the country and shows, it shows we are much bigger than all the other Columbuses.
Yeah, yeah.
So they add the qualifier in there of Columbus, Ohio, so no one mixes us up with, what, Columbus, Georgia? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's another, if you go back to over the years, 50 years ago, Columbus, Ohio was probably a lot closer in population to some of these other Columbuses. And there are so many of them. It's like so many states have their own Columbus that I'm sure that's where it kind of arose from, is always having to say Ohio just to specify which one you're talking about.
Mm. I mean, I know that, like, I guess it's experienced Columbus's job to try to give Columbus an identity, right? That's what they do. They're the tourism organization. Mm. But just anecdotally, for my opinion, not that it matters, is I like when they leaned into the us of Columbus. Mm-hmm. I feel like your book shows how diverse and the city really is, not just from neighborhoods, but from people, mm-hmm. too. And I like that idea of leaning into the us. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree.
Oh, yeah, I like that, too.
It's about us. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I also I think it's important. I think the people who move here now, they see that. They see that it's a diverse city and there's lots of changes happening, and they embrace that right away. Sometimes maybe the people that have been here a long time, you know, the city has kind of grown up around them and they're without them noticing, you know, in some cases. So it's
You've been here a long time. Do you feel, I mean, but you're a reporter, so I guess you've noticed.
I also moved away and came back. So I think that had an impact on how I looked at it. But
Childhood friends, like, do they feel like Columbus has grown up?
Or, yeah, maybe. I think it is more likely if you're born and raised to still kind of hold the idea of Columbus as the city it was when you grew up in it and not so much update, you know, like, maybe you don't go to the restaurants on Bethel Road. You could even drive down Bethel Road and have no idea the richness of the culinary experiences there, you know.
Because you got to get past the McDonald's and you got to go behind
those huge parking lots. They're at the very end of the parking lot. So.
Jason, how should cities develop in ways that benefit all people, like to showcase the diversity? Is there a way to be beneficial to people of all income levels when you're designing a city?
Yes. And this is where work throughout the city right now focused on our housing market, and mm-hmm. particular housing affordability is essential. It's, again, we have to think about one of the things that has made Columbus so attractive has been the reasonable cost of our housing market. Mm. As that asset slips away, not only do we have a lot more families struggling and just having a much harder time surviving and thriving here, but we suddenly become less attractive, right? Because it's just harder to live here, harder to be able to afford to be able to get a home here or an apartment. And so as I kind of look forward and thinking about the future of the city, I do think our housing production and the affordable housing stock here in the city is going to be critical to if we, you know, maintain that identity as this diverse, welcoming place to all.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the evolution of Columbus, as showcased in the book Columbus in 50 Maps, with its author, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren, and Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture. So Brent has covered this a lot. Columbus recently changed a lot of its zoning codes, this whole zone-in process. So, Jason, as a city and regional planning expert, is that what was needed? Was the city like just behind the times in its code?
Yeah, very much. And it's not just a Columbus issue. I mean, Ohio is the home of Euclidean zoning, which is 100 years old. And
I don't know what that word is.
So the traditional zoning came out of a Supreme Court case in Euclid, Ohio. Ohio set the precedent for what land use regulation should look like. The problem being is that, you know, society changed over the last 100 years, and our cities have been slow to reform and accommodate that change. So it was badly needed from that perspective. And, you know, if we look at our traditional zoning, you know, we're looking at zoning ideas that are 75 plus years old, and are just to think of how much our society has changed since then. So very much needed, and I think more work is needed to come in that space.
Are we behind? Other cities have changed their zoning codes long ago? Or is it every city have a problem with something like this?
It's very much a regional thing. Mm-hmm. I think here in the Midwest, we love our Euclidean zoning. Mm-hmm. In you know, some of the coastal housing markets, they've had a little more innovation, but I think, you know, compared to a lot of our peers, we're definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, your coverage of zone in and the changes, I mean, do you see some of these maps changing in the next 10 years even because of the zoning changes?
I've been trying to track what has happened since the first round of zoning changes came in place, and I think partially because of economic factors, interest rates, labor costs, and then like adding in tariffs to that situation. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen like a huge influx of building like on these corridors that the mm-hmm. city created to allow like taller buildings, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. We have seen some bigger projects get approved, and we've seen more proposals, but we'll see. I think the next like 5 years, that's going to be key mm-hmm. to see kind of what happens.
Do you think that you could do another book looking at a whole bunch of other aspects of Columbus? Like, did you have more than 50 maps in your head?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I keep thinking of ideas. I think it would be no problem to come up with 50 more.
So the next book will be another 50
yeah,
maps
right.
of
yeah,
Columbus.
Exactly.
Okay. Jason, look, from your perspective, was there anything like it of the books, like a map you would want to see just from a city and regional plan?
This is the nerd in me coming out. I'm teaching our city planning history class to undergrads right now, and I wish this was out about 3 months ago, because we talk about all these topics in our class. And so I think, you know, in particular, I think some of the historical maps that Brett puts together are just so fascinating, and they give you insights when you look at some of the things that are planned to be that he talks about later in the map, like the bus rapid transit system. I think it's a really enjoyable book and just fun to delve into and learn and explore.
And for map nerds around, right?
Yes.
Looking into the future, where do you think Columbus is heading from a development and transportation perspective, Jason? I mean, you know, we decided now that we're not a teenage city. We're in our 20s. We can legally drink, but we're still growing. So we have a lot of growth. So where look forward for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, certainly the blueprint is there with the corridors that have been rezoned. As Brett noted, you know, when economic conditions, I think, get better, we probably will see a lot more intensive growth along those corridors and other areas of the city. I do think, you know, and I raised this issue earlier, you know, our affordable housing issues are real, and our housing crisis here is very real. And it's a, you know, relatively recent phenomenon. We've always had some affordability issues, but they've not grown as severe as they have in the last few years. So that's going to be a big challenge. You know, if we aren't able to address that, that will put limits on how much we can grow, who can actually afford to be here, how, you know, the vibrancy of the economy, et cetera.
Could you have done an affordable housing map?
I guess. Yeah, I thought about it. I would have liked to, yeah, but it's hard to get this sort of to get down into the granular detail. It would have been pretty tough.
You would have to define affordable,
right,
and
right.
then make a map and then have everyone argue with you.
Yes.
I guess in the last minute we have left, is there any one last thing you want people to know about Columbus in 50 maps?
I guess that it's not just for map nerds. It definitely is for map nerds, but you know, like
no,
you said,
you'll turn yourself into
yes,
a map nerd.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, I hope that people enjoy it. And it's fun now to get some feedback on it because it's so different than my stories, which go up instantly and people can read. And a lot of this I worked on an year ago. Yeah.
So people can comment on your stories right
exactly.
away, but the book is printed.
A little different,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you both for your time. Our guests were Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren, who's the author of the new book, Columbus in 50 Maps. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And Jason Reese, assistant professor of city and regional planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture at Ohio State University. Thank you for your time, Jason.
Yeah, thank you.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, listen back at WOSU.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. Every episode is also available in our mobile app. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook, and you can follow the show on Instagram. Our handle is @AllSidesWOSU. This is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Federal